Okay, moving right along, we have our other co-moderator, organizer, Bu-Young Hadi, who's going to talk more about smartphone apps.
Thank you, and it will be interesting because I'm so glad that Rebecca is already up here. So this hopefully will be complementary to what she already teach us or talk about. I don't know why that Skype is keep on coming, but they're with us in this. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I hope to share also just stories, you know, some success stories, some sob stories about building an iPhone and Android apps. And it won't only be stories from our program, but also from other programs, other teams that are trying to do this around us, from other land-grant universities around us. So I'll try to keep the stories general. As an introduction, the app that we were involved in building is called NPIPM Guide app. It's both iPhone and Android platforms. The story goes that about 2 years ago, the Northern Plains IPM, that's NPIPM, the Northern Plains IPM working group decided to build this comprehensive guide for economically important crops, which is soybean, wheat, corn, for the area. And I was hired largely to do that. We've been able to build the website in collaboration with Buckwood, or CC, or whatever. And last January, we thought, well, we've had the website out there, at least the soybean pass out there. The natural upshot will be to utilize this next evolution in technology, which is building an app. And we built one. It's launched in March, I believe, of this year. And since March, it's been downloaded over 1,200 times. It was cited as one of the top 20 best mobile apps in agriculture by CropLife magazine. Granted, there might only be 50 of those out there, but still, to be in the top half is pretty cool. And I'd like to share with you some of the issues that we've been able to work through while doing this. Some of the technical issues, developmental issues, and user issues. The first of the technical issues really is about size. I'll be very interested to know how about iPads, how big is that app. But for our app, when we first got it out, it was 250 megabytes. Your common unit of iPod, the older ones, is only, what, 2 gigs, I think, 2 gigabytes. The newer one might have a bigger storage, but if you have a 2 gigabyte storage and one app is 250 megabytes, that's not good. We actually had heard stories where people tried to download our app and it crashed their unit. That's even worse. So we thought about it and we've been able to actually downsize it. It's now about 50 megabytes. It's pretty good, but it's still rather big. There are several ways that you can go around, you know, overcoming these issues. One is by housing images. Our app is image intensive. It's an IPM guide app, so it's full with pictures, diagnostic pictures, as much as it is with text too. And there's also a binomial key that is embedded in there. So there's a lot of pictures in this one app. That's why it's so big. It's possible to just have the text in the app and also some placeholder for your picture, that when people fire up your app or fire up a page in your app, that picture holder access the server and then show up the picture. That's one way to do it. Of course, the problem with that is then you're going to need connectivity. You're going to need internet connectivity wherever that person is. And I'm from South Dakota, and in South Dakota, dead zones are real. So it limits kind of the usage of these apps if we were to go to that route. So the route that we went is by resizing the image. We found that the pictures that we use mostly from Buckwood are pretty big because they are really optimized for, you know, desktop screens. And it doesn't hurt if you resize it into a smaller image, because mostly people use it for their handheld unit anyways. It's significantly smaller. You can resize it there, and it really cut the size down. Of course, we found out that some people use it in their iPad, and then when they open the pictures, it blow up. Really not very nice. So there must be some happy middle there where we can resize it. Maybe an iPad screen will be the optimum size. Another thing that we are just now thinking about, since we are about to push out corn pest and soybean disease update, is, we now have 50 megabytes size app. When we have this two section, it will be about 150. And when we put, you know, weed disease and weed insect, you see how this can snowball really quickly into one of those big giant app again. And of course, we have to think about, all right, do we put this in one app, just keep on updating it into a big thing, or do we release different apps? I think those are the considerations that we need to go through. Another thing is, how do we alert user of new update? I'll be interested to see how iPads does that too. One way that we've been thinking of, if you use iPhone or Android phone, sometimes you see your icon there, there's a blurb that says, hey, there's an update for this particular app. So it is possible to actually write the code in there if you think about it in advance, so that people know, oh, there's new update. Interesting issue. Development. Who shall develop this? What I found out by talking with other colleagues is that most of the universities seem to be pretty gung-ho about pushing app out. So that's good news. And some of the universities actually have a dedicated programmer in their IT. Hopefully they are easy to work with, which is in our case, that's more or less the case. University IT unit usually charge about $3,000 to $5,000 for an app to be built. And since university administrator are pretty gung-ho about pushing apps, usually they, you know, give it to you for free sometimes. So that's the nice thing about that. Student workers, as maybe iPads did, is perfect option. Self-build, I agree with Rebecca that if you want to try learning Xcode, that's going to be a huge investment. But if you want to build this in Android has an app maker software. It's easy. It's drag and drop. So it's just like making this PowerPoint presentation. It's really easy. Another option would be to learn, if you're going to learn something anyway, learn Flash, Adobe Flash. You can build an app using Adobe Flash and then channel it to whatever platform that you want. So that's really easy solution. The next solution, which is also interesting, is of course using an outside consultant. There are two types, at least, of outside consultants that I found. First is a team. They usually charge per app about $5,000 to $10,000 per app, and then about that much again for each update. The good thing about a team is that you have somebody who know how to code, and usually you also have somebody who know how to design user interface, and you have somebody who knows how to do graphic design. So your app look pretty and usable. You can also go through a cheaper route, which is just hire a freelancer. A freelancer, you can go to odesk.com. That's where all the freelancer types hang out, or if you happen to know somebody. Freelancers usually charge per hour. They're pretty good at kind of knowing how long an app will take. One of our estimations seemed to be a freelancer will cost us between $3,000 to $5,000, so it's almost like doing it in-house. The problem is it's just one person, and usually that person doesn't know how to do this all three functions that I just told you. So what you have is that you're going to have somebody who know how to code well, but do not know how to design a button well. So you end up with a very clunky app, at least in our experience. Of course, with outside consultant, there will also be, you know, considerations about what's your university policy about it. And some universities are more amenable about that. business model is the very last thing that I'd like to talk about in this issue. Free or paid apps. Again, university policies seem to be in play here too. Some universities are starting to push the whole cost recovery model of doing extension. So you might have to go paid app model. One of the more inventive model that I found out was by a friend who simply signed a contract with an outside company saying that, all right, we become a content provider, we'll write all the content, you do the app, you market the app, and you pay us to provide the content and update it every now and then. I think that was pretty cool. So that's a possibility too. The very last thing that I'd like to talk about is about users. Who are our users? Last spring and summer, and how do they use mobile apps? Do they use it at all? Last summer, I did this small survey to our growers. About 125 people answered the surveys. This first slide showed, the question is simple. Do you have a smartphone? The blue bars represent people who own smartphones. The red bar represent people who do not own smartphones. The x-axis showed the age group breakup. And it's very clear to see that yes, your younger users will be more likely to have a smartphone. So I asked the question just a little bit differently then. Some of you don't have a smartphone, but if you know that we can build an app that will increase your productivity in doing your business, will it be more interesting for you to own a smartphone? The left set of this bar shows the answer by people who already have a smartphone. The blue bar says that, yeah, mobile apps actually make having a smartphone more appealing, while the red one said, no, that still doesn't cut it. So the left said they already have a smartphone, and what you can see there is that they don't really care. They're gonna still buy and use a smartphone even if there is no usage for their business. But the right set are the people who don't currently own smartphones, and in there you can see that at least 50% of these people are actually interested to buy a smartphone, you start trying investing to use a smartphone if it can be used for their businesses. I call this the fence sitters among our growers. You know, they're just sitting right there and say, "Oh, this might be interesting. I might grow into this." And this is my very last slide. I asked the question. All right, if just imagine that this smartphone thing can really be used for your business. What type of app would you like us to build? And most people actually said the crop pest guide is something that they would like to see. And we have an app for you. And about one third said market price reporter. And the rest are split between people who would like to see a degree day calculator and field scouting. So this become our blueprint in a way of building our next app. To conclude, I think we need to remember this, that if we are building apps for extension entomology, inadvertently we are targeting the younger users. And with some educational efforts, we'll probably be able to win the fence sitters, people who are just sitting on the fence and maybe I'll use it someday. And then we probably need to remember, and this last point was actually from Leo Marx's book, a 1964 book, about how rural users actually use technology differently than urban users. We need to remember that in rural areas, it seemed like online conversations, online usage of information start offline. So one probably shouldn't expect the online world, including mobile apps, to just fly off, just take off in rural areas. One would need to fight to build it. So that's what I have. I'd be glad to answer questions. Thank you.